Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyond Ananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hi there, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the undarkened corridors of power, and we shine a light ahead of us to where evolution is leading. The purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right, front and center, to face the music and dance together, to address problems instead of just defending positions. Well, as we in the U.S. find ourselves in the midst of a toxic, contentious election season that threatens to continue indefinitely, two apparently contradictory ideas seem to be true. First, we are deeply divided, not just into two parties, but really into two narratives, and in fact, into two separate and seemingly incompatible realities. But the second thing, and this is very interesting, is that the vast majority of the American people agree they want to work together to find solutions and not just blame the other side. As Albert Einstein famously said, a problem cannot be solved at the same level it was created. The two political parties are locked in battle in a dualistic playing field in the death throes of Newtonian politics, where equal and opposite forces fight to the death with we the people and the natural world as collateral damage. Einstein said something else too. He said that the field is a sole governing agency over the particle. In other words, if we want to transform what we call politics or anything in the world, we have to get off the old battlefield and step onto a new playing field. Well, our conversation today is about how we can play on the unified field that is above and beyond all the particles we're trying to move around. For example, what if instead of using force and friction-based energy systems we have today, we had free energy that taps the infinite energies of the non-physical world? What if the drugs and surgery, symptom management, illness care system that we currently have gave way to energy medicine that changes the vibrational field so that a disease cannot take hold? These are things that are real, folks. You'll hear about them right now. Our guest this week, Foster Gamble, is the producer of a new film, Thrive 2, This Is What It Takes, that offers heartening examples of how these technologies, which can have been dismissed as science fiction, are actually proving to be scientific fact. In the first Thrive movie, Foster and his wife, Kimberly Carter Gamble, journey deep down the rabbit hole to explore dark and controversial ideas. In this one, I heard Foster say, "We have found the light at the end of the rabbit hole." So we're going to hear about that. Foster Gamble is the president and co-founder of Clear Compass Media. He's the creator, host, and co-writer and director of visual design for the Thrive movies. At age 14, he had a vision where he glimpsed what he perceived to be the universe's fundamental energy pattern. And he spent the last 35 years trying to figure out the details and implications of what he had seen. And that quest has taken two paths, a scientific journey and an exploration of the human potential to successfully navigate through the challenges that threaten our survival. Thrive represents the convergence of these two paths. So I'm excited to have you. Welcome, Foster Gamble.
Thank you, Steve. It's great to be with you.
Good. Well, we'll jump right in. Your new movie, Thrive 2, offers some truly outside-the-box and outside-the-matrix ideas that take us above and beyond the conversations that have been dominating our attention. How did the Thrive movement begin, and how does Thrive 2 differ from Thrive 1?
Well, in terms of how the Thrive movement began, it's actually pretty funny because we were just a few months from the launch of the movie, and we had hired a PR team to help us with public relations, and we had developed this website, and we were talking with him strategically one day, and he had seen the rough cut of the film, and he just said, you know, guys, this is a movie, but I'm really sure it's going to turn into a movement, so you might want to get that URL. So Timberland and I looked at each other and said, okay, let's do that. And sure enough, we didn't know whether people would be ready for or interested in the movie at all. I used to say to Kimberly, maybe we end up sticking this in the ground in a time capsule or broadcasting it out to some other planet where they might find it useful sometime. But so we were absolutely thrilled when the film debuted and just went viral, and it's continued to go viral for over the last 9 years. There's still over 1 million people a month watching it, and over 90 million people in total and in 27 languages. So we were really encouraged to find out that, yes, people want to know what's really going on, even if it's difficult to hear, and they want to know the truth so that they can design and implement solutions that are actually commensurate to the problem. So that's what evolved into Thrive Movement. And then in terms of the difference between Thrive 1 and Thrive 2, Thrive 1 was really a diagnosis and a promise. The subtitle was, it was Thrive, What on Earth Will It Take? So we were looking into what's in the way of humanity thriving. And the more we looked into that, the more we realized that the body politicky is very sticky.
It's even icky without David Icky.
So we ended up doing a very in-depth diagnosis. And, you know, it's not easy for anyone to hear a hard diagnosis, but if you actually don't want to die from whatever is going on in you, it's worth listening to, at least when you're ready, so that you can actually do something about it and cure it. And so So that was the diagnosis that has led to the treatment in Thrive 2. And the treatment is really, okay, what are the principles and what are the proof of those principles that create a blueprint by which we can create solutions and actually thrive as humanity, not just as some utopian pipe dream, but what's the evidence? What are the stepping stones to actually get there, and do they already exist? And then on the other end of it, the Thrive 1 carried a lot of promise of healing technologies that had been suppressed and free energy technologies that had been suppressed and the various breakthroughs in different areas, but time after time they had been suppressed. So fortunately, we, in our intervening years, we really were after the proof. We were after the results rather than just the promise. And we never thought we'd make another feature movie. But the results that we found, because we spent 5 years traveling all over the world, vetting the best stuff that we could find. We were contacted by over 1,000 innovators and inventors, and we just couldn't resist. You know, there's so much good sounding stuff. So we went out and tested, and of course, most of it wasn't what they claimed it was, but enough of it was to know that for us, that this could change the world. And so we really moved from the promise of Thrive 1 to the results in Thrive 2.
So before we get into, you know, what's in movie 1 and what the exciting prospects are in movie 2, I'm always interested in how people find their calling. So I saw in your intro that you had an epiphany when you were 14 years old, and I'm curious as to how that has played out throughout your adult life and your chosen work.
Well, it's very interesting looking back on it. Of course, it makes sense in retrospect, but at the time, boy, I sure didn't know what was going on. For those of you who aren't old enough to remember these type of incidents, imagine me being told by my fifth grade teacher to, where the siren was going to go off, imitating a nuclear attack on the United States. And what we were all going to do is dive under our desks and wrap our heads in our arms. And so the siren went off. I ducked under my desk. And then I looked around and realized, I don't think these adults know what they're talking about. I don't think this desk is going to save me or us. And that was a turning point in my life when I realized, okay, I need to either find people who understand this or I need to figure it out myself, because we are in deep doo-doo. We are in what my guru Swami Beyondananda calls a real situation. So I realized that in retrospect that I dedicated my life to finding out how human beings can operate in harmony with energy. And it took a lot of different paths, but it was only a couple of years after that I was on a school bus, actually riding to a tennis match. And I was looking out the window. I must have got kind of hypnotized by the light coming through the trees and so forth. And all of a sudden, I had this full-on vision of a solar system that morphed into an atom that morphed into a human being. And I realized all three of those are the same pattern, that they have the stillness at the center, they have things rotating around the outside. And I just had this visceral feeling that I, as a human, am probably like smack in the middle between the tiny little atom and the grand solar system. And I didn't know what that meant, but I knew it was a real hint. My next couple of months became like the Close Encounters of the Third Kind. You remember those people running around doing things like making a mountain out of mashed potatoes?
Yeah.
I was up in all my spare time. I was spending in the lab of my high school physics lab, and I was building this thing. I was gathering spare parts and, you know, these glass blocks and these light generators and so forth. And people would ask me what I'm doing, and I said, I really don't know, but I'll let you know when it's done. And what ended up, I was literally guided in this process and ended up using this giant flashlight and then refracting it through glass blocks until it made a full circle around this room and came back into itself like the snake eating its tail, like the Ouroboros. And then I turned off the light in the lab, turned on the flashlight, and there was this floating ring of light. And it was just one of the most powerful moments of my life. I still had no idea what it was. But I realized that's what I was supposed to build. And now, you know, looking back many decades later, that I was being shown that the torus is the fundamental pattern of energy. And if we can relate harmoniously to the torus at every level, then we can survive and thrive as a species.
You know, it's interesting. That was one of the key pieces I remember from the Thrive One movie, is this the torus, which seems to be a self-generating, auto-poetic energy field that just keeps recreating itself in a way infinitely. Is this where this notion of free energy comes from?
Absolutely. The torus is like the blueprint for every single successful device that I've seen is based on the torus. And the key is that we're not things. I think most of your audience knows this. And we're not isolated things in an empty, dead universe. We're actually just a collection of whirlpools that is cohered around a consciousness, around an attention, in a fully alive universe that has virtually infinite energy at every point. And physics has proven this now. They finally caught on to what the mystics were saying, for, you know, 1,000 years ago. But anyway, the key is that all this energy is moving. And if we can dance with the energy harmoniously, it will give us everything we need. It will give us the insights we need. It will give us the healing that we need. And it will give us the energy that we need, as long as we don't violate it. So yeah, the torus is the pattern, the blueprint for sustainable energy systems at every scale of the universe, as far as we can tell so far.
You know, what I said earlier, essentially, is that we are, even though it's been more than 100 years since Einstein and just about 100 years since Max Planck, we are still living in this Newtonian this or that universe. And, you know, it's these opposite forces that are banging against each other. And one of the texts that I've loved is Glenda Green's book, Love Without End, which is channeled material from Jesus, as she says. And one of the points that's made there is that as we evolve, we're going to move from force-based energy to magnetic-based energy. That most of what we are thinking when we think of energy, it involves friction. It involves moving something against another force. And what you seem to be saying and what the proponents of this free energy seem to be saying is that there's an infinite amount of energy in this unified field that, because we are so focused on the physical world, we have not yet developed the perception to begin to tap this. So is that pretty much what we're getting at here?
Yeah, I think that's beautifully said. And another interesting aspect of my quest over the last 20 years to actually find working free energy devices is that that two out of the three main free energy devices that I found were invented by people who never graduated from high school. in one case, not even junior high school. And at first I thought, wow, what, you know, isn't that strange? And then I realized, actually, it's quite predictable because they weren't trained in the limited Newtonian deterministic types of physics that you were mentioning before. And so they weren't constrained to think that they had to break something in order to get the energy out of it because there wasn't enough energy to go around.
Very good. You know, yes, I love that.
One of the reasons why we made Thrive 2 is I wanted people at least to see on film what the experience is like to stand next to a mechanical, well, not really mechanical, a technological hardware material device that has no moving parts, is making no sound, is putting off no pollution, is plugged into nothing, and yet is putting out half a megawatt of energy, enough to run 300 homes in Africa where the inventor came up with this when he was a teenager. And it just moves you to tears because it's the experience, it's the validation that we live in a universe of infinite abundance if we treat it right. And it's also the evidence that the pollution that we're dealing with, the fighting wars over other people's oil and burning fossil fuels and all this stuff, that it actually we're in the moment now where that's no longer necessary.
We're going to take a very short break. We'll be back with Foster Gamble talking about Thrive after these messages.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
These are the sounds of a dinner. A dinner that almost didn't happen. A dinner now served, thanks to people like you. Due to COVID-19, 17 million more Americans may face hunger. Feeding America is helping our neighbors in need. And if you're able, you can too. Donations are being accepted at feedingamerica.org/coronavirus. Brought to you by the Ad Council and Feeding America. 200 food banks strong.
Well, we're back on Wiki Politiki with our guest, Foster Gamble. Foster, some of the other things that you brought forward via the Thrive movies involve an overarching meta view of politics, economics, ecologics, and social policy. And this, of course, is, it would sound to some people like some great conspiracy theory and so on. But I think it's important that you present this meta view of how you think we got here, because I think that's really going to be helpful for people to understand why we're in such conflict with one another these days.
Well, you know, there's a quote that I love from Martin Luther King Jr., where he said that the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. And I think it's really helpful to just pop out to the 30,000-foot level and look back to the times of the pharaohs, and then the dictators, and then the communism and fascism, and even to democracy. And we've obviously come a long way. But what I like to say is we're not there yet. Let's don't stop just short of getting the cancer out of our body. And I would suggest that the cancer is the myth of authority, because that bending toward justice has been throughout the course of human history going more and more toward honoring individual rights. The one thing that I have found traveling all over the world that every single human being agrees to is they don't want to be violated against their will. Now, they might want to be violated voluntarily. That's a different thing. But nobody wants to be violated against their will. And that goes hand in hand with what's called the non-aggression principle, which just simply states that no one is allowed to initiate force against another human being except in true self-defense. It sounds like the most obvious thing in the world. You know, that's the golden rule. Sure, I agree with that. But then 98% of the world's population turns right around and votes for and pays to give special rights to politicians, who then take their money, oftentimes against their will, and then go do outrageous things with it. So we're really stuck in this dilemma where we still believe that democracy, which at its best is mob rule, you know, it's majority rule, we're still stuck thinking that government is going to solve our problem. And I've asked big audiences, you know, how many of you actually think that the major problems that we're facing are going to be solved by government? And I'll tell you, without exception, the number is very, very small. So if we look through history and see that every single government has been corrupt and is eventually either collapses or there's a revolution or something like that, and then it's replaced with the next corrupt regime, every single time, the one thing we're not asking is maybe government itself is the corruption. And it is. It's so obvious a third grader wouldn't even blink at the notion that, oh, well, if somebody pays somebody else to put on a uniform and a badge and a gun to go take somebody else's money and give it to you, you know, that's not fair. You know, that's theft. That's stealing. But we've all been duped since kindergarten into thinking, well, it's okay. That's government. You know, that's the price of civilization. That's the social contract. No, that's actually, it's so uncivilized that it's got us on the brink of self-destruction. And as far as I know, I never signed that contract. So it's not a social contract. So what Kimberly and I are doing in our films and in our website and so forth is trying to raise the most radical notion on the planet, which is also the most obvious thing that we've found, which is that nobody should have rights that everybody doesn't have. And everybody should be accountable for any transgression against anyone else or against ecosystems.
You know, the election, this election that we're having right now, it seems to me that what we have are two very fearful polarities in opposition. And one polarity is afraid that the government is going to be a dictatorship of an individual, and the other polarity are afraid that the government is going to be a dictatorship of the collective. What is the difference? Yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, again, it's two awful, two awful choices. And yet pulling ourselves out of that way of thinking seems to require that that people evolve to a level of self-responsibility to be able to govern themselves, a level of self-responsibility that we haven't yet been able to achieve. So I know that you're a practical individual, and everything that you're doing, and I love the both movies and seeing the solutions in Thrive 2. So from a practical standpoint, how do we make this transition to actually become responsible individuals who are worthy of sovereignty?
Well, mostly we use reason. All the meditation.
Why, that sounds very unreasonable, Foster. I'm sorry.
Exactly. You can get shouted down in the crowd for suggesting such an outrageous thing, especially these days, because, kids in school, and particularly in the colleges, they're literally indoctrinated not to think reasonably. This whole postmodern, there is no truth, their morality is subjective, and all of this stuff. That is a very conscious plan to have the population believing what you just said so well, which is here we are in a choice between two evils, and one is the dictatorship of an individual, the other is the dictatorship of a collective, but they're both wrong. Actually, if you do your research and look beyond that, it's actually a dictatorship of a collection of psychopathic individuals who have been controlling both sides of that, you know, of that crab claw, of that pincher between the communism on the left and the fascism on the right. They're really the same thing. Sometimes they refer to it as the political horseshoe rather than spectrum, because you go either way very far and you end up, it's all fascism. It's all authoritarian control. And if people are willing to go down the rabbit hole long enough to realize that at least for 200 years, it's well documented that there has been a group of people who have planned to use this polarizing of human beings, you know, the right and left, and the genders and the races and the religions, to use whatever polarity they can to keep us fighting against each other, while the resolution each time is, well, more government. And so the government gets bigger and bigger. The government is an enforcement arm of the bankers who have persuaded us to let them print money for themselves whenever they want. And behind that is the secret society of psychopaths who actually have in mind. It sounds like a terrible James Bond movie, but it's true. I have no question after 30 years of researching this that these people, their sole goal is global domination. And unfortunately, they've duped the population so severely that they're actually very, very close. And through things like 9/11, through the 2008 housing collapse, and now through COVID, they're using these false flag operations, and they're almost there in terms of totally locking down people in their homes, martial law, cashless society, mandatory vaccines, chipping, tracing, tracking, all this stuff. They're very close, and they're going to keep going unless enough of us wake up and say no and take action right now.
It sounds like what you're talking about is a James Bondage movie. That's what you're talking about. We're in a James Bondage movie. And you know what's really interesting and disturbing is that after this election, people on the progressive side couldn't really quite understand how it was that Biden didn't win by a big margin. And I've been trying to explain how the left got left and the right got right, in the sense that, you know, the people, the awakening people on the conservative side are rightfully alarmed at all of these steps into our privacy. You know, it used to be that the left was the ones that were concerned about free speech and privacy and all of that. And now so many people have gone along with the cancel culture, with toxic forms of political correctness, with not really allowing, I wouldn't even call it debate, I would call it conversation, wouldn't really allowing conversation where two different points of view are aired and people get to go, let me see, that's an interesting idea. And then all of a sudden we start cultivating this collective intelligence instead of the stupidization program that's been going on. So you brought up a really interesting point that we are at a point where, a lot of people that I know were in terror of the Biden administration being elected because that would move forward this mandatory vaccination. You know, not that the other side wouldn't do that either, because, you know, again, authority is authority. So at the point that we are at now, how do we begin to mobilize this awakening awareness into something that actually influences a critical mass of the heretofore uncritical masses?
Well, it's a great question, because the in the model that we use in the Thrive Movement, there's a seven-stage kind of passageway or quest down the rabbit hole. And that's why we say, keep going. There is light at the end of the rabbit hole. But the initial stages are seeing, okay, something's happening in the world. It's being spun by the media, by the vested interest. If we follow the money and really think critically, we will ultimately get to, okay, what's really going on, and what is this, whatever scam it is, who is it benefiting? And once you get that, then you actually get your feet on the ground, and then you can start taking individual action and collaborating with other people along the lines or with the principles of non-violation. And so we have on our old website something called Thrive Solutions Hub, and we're just in the process of updating it and bringing it forward to the new one. It'll be out in a few weeks. But there's over 1,100 groups in 90-plus countries around the world who are doing exactly this. They're dealing with hundreds of issues, but they're doing it through non-coercive action. And the Solutions Hub teaches a process that we've learned over the last 20 years of how people can collaborate in a non-coercive way that creates a whole system solution to whatever problem it is, so that you bring together in a community, either locally or virtually over the internet, around a particular issue. You can bring together the lawyers and the scientists and the media people and the relationship people and the philosophers and the economists and so forth. You can bring all those skills to bear in a process that mimics the toroidal communication flow and really includes everyone. And we've used this with tremendous success in getting GMOs banned in Colorado and getting glyphosate banned on Maui and getting stopping toxic aerial spraying in the Monterey, Santa Cruz, San Francisco area. And we've been teaching this model to groups all over the world because it's got some several key pieces that most models are missing, so that activists don't burn out, no one takes over the activity, and it can end up being very successful.
This is really interesting. So again, there are so many great ideas out there, and many people launch these websites, and they have fabulous ideas, and it's hello, 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 anybody out there, out there, out there, because they end up getting a bunch of cheese, but no Indians show up. So how have you been able to cultivate participation on a granular level?
Well, we're not out to control people. We're not out to impress people. It's fine if we inspire people, but what we're really interested in is empowering people. So it's all voluntary. It's all up to them. We're not babysitting them. We're not funding them, but we are encouraging them and generously sharing of our time and knowledge to whoever is interested, to share what we have found works. Both Kimberly and I have been blessed to have very effective careers in activism for many decades. And so we can pass on the benefit of that, particularly to young activists who are passionate but not necessarily experienced in how to get along with each other, how to be clear on your own purpose and focus, and then how to actually move through the resolution of an issue till it's actually behind you. You can move on to the next one, but you keep the real treasure, which is the email list connecting freedom lovers who are we're now finding each other all over the world and finding the principles and the strategies and tactics by which to collaborate effectively.
You know, what you said really brings forward a really important point, and that is how the institutions that are designed to solve problems get reified. In other words, you get an institution that's, let's say, designed to, like the American Cancer Association, where would they be without cancer? So yeah. The solution group uses the same money that's used by the corporations that are doing the horrible things, and then they create a foundation like the Bill Gates Foundation or some of these others that are designed to handle the problems, sort of, that they've created. But they can't really ever go back to address the fundamental cause of the problems because they are the fundamental cause of the problems. So, so what you're talking about is an organization that is flexible, that doesn't need the problem to stay alive and can move on to the next problem.
Yes, exactly.
Cool. Well, we're going to take a very short break, and then we'll be back after these messages. We're going to talk more about some of the discoveries that you've made and some other promising things that are coming up. We'll be back with Foster Gamble talking about Thrive after these messages.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
911, what is your emergency?
My kid shot himself.
All right, where's the wounds?
911, what's your emergency?
Please help my son shot his brother.
911, what is your emergency?
Okay. 911, please state your emergency.
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns.
It wasn't locked.
Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Well, we're back on the final segment of Wiki Politiki with our guest Foster Gamble. So much to talk about, and I really want to impress on my listeners that this really is a very helpful conversation if we get through this current passage. You've also spoken about a real financial reset and some of your encounters and connections with forces in China and the prospects for financial transformation. Could you say something about that?
Sure. Well, there is a lot of talk about the Great Reset right now, and that refers to the scheme of the World Economic Forum and the globalist institutions that they are very deeply associated with, and there are a lot of them that are behind the whole COVID thing. And that is not, they make it sound like you're rebooting your computer. Oh, now everything's going to be all fresh. No, it's actually just a well-organized and brilliantly planned scheme to create technocratic fascism for the entire world. And so they're going to redesign education. And the Klaus Schwab, the head of that, is already working hand in hand with the Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York, to redesign education for New York school children. And they're going to redesign the economic structures and so forth. And I can guarantee you, and I welcome you to look at, I've been subscribing to their website for quite a while now so that I could follow all this. And it's really well organized and absolutely chilling. That's not the Great Reset that I'm talking about. The reset that I've been following for a number of years, and my guess is, if past experience is useful, that, Steve, probably half your audience will know exactly what I'm talking about, and the other half will think I'm completely crazy. but you can do the research on this, and I've been doing it since 2012 very intensely. And this reset is actually a kind of a joint project of the Asian Dragon Alliance, which is a centuries-old league of royal families in China, the Philippines, Indonesia, Japan, and Vietnam. They're actually the wealthiest people on Earth by far, way beyond the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers, because they've been collecting and hiding gold for over 1,000 years. And they have a spiritual covenant to use at least 80% of that of all that wealth to restore the global ecology and to restore and balance the global economy. And they, I have been fortunate to go to most of these countries and meet with some of the leaders of these families, and they're very sincere, they're very well organized, and they're trying to do this as rapidly as they can without creating World War III, because these are the families. Actually, I was told and then checked it out and found out it was true that actually when the Federal Reserve started printing money in 1913, they actually started borrowing it from these dragon families. That's the part that people don't know. Same with the IMF, same with the World Bank. And the so they've got all this wealth, but they loaned it to various countries under good intentions, but then particularly the Federal Reserve System on a global basis completely violated the terms of the agreement. They were supposed to restore the ecology and balance the global economy. They've done exactly the opposite. So they've now been disenfranchised from being able to borrow that money anymore. But anyway, so there's the dragon families on the one hand. They are hand in hand with what's called the White Hat, which is an alliance of military intelligence agency and some government patriots in the U.S. who have been very disillusioned by what's become of the institutions that they joined for virtuous reason. And so they have been banding together also, and they represent the potential force that can go together with the money from the dragon families and get rid of this globalist banking cabal that's trying to create this one world government, the new world order, whatever you want to call it. So their goal is to expose and obsolete them and return to a multipolar world based on real assets, you know, real currencies, and nonviolence and protection of the environment. So it's a tremendously hopeful scenario, particularly given how close we are to global totalitarianism right now. The fact that truth media is emerging as it is, and that there is both the wealth and the force all aligned around these principles, brings more hope, frankly, than virtually anything that I've seen in my lifetime.
You know, it's interesting, but this entire QAnon narrative, which in some ways seems rather hokey and rather distorted, seems to have some of those elements of truth related to possible, enlightened forces inside of governments and military and so on. I'm sure you're familiar with that narrative. What is the difference or similarity between what you're saying and that particular QAnon narrative?
Well, there are tremendous similarities and overlaps. Right now, there's a huge propaganda movement to disempower the QAnon information, because the QAnon information is actually very savvy, and it's exposing a lot of the corruption in governments, not only in the U.S., but worldwide. And so there's a counter movement to try to discredit it. And unfortunately, it's a little too easy, because I think that there is a quality of exaggeration. Some of it could be disinformation in some of the materials that they put out. But in my experience, the core of the information is absolutely real about the corruption, about the international child trafficking rings, about the financial fraud, and about the well-intentioned movements to expose and arrest those criminals, rescue the kids, which they have been doing in great numbers, and I know a lot of people who have been involved in that. I've met with a fair number of people who are part of the QAnon thing, and they're the ones I've met with are very real, very dedicated, super well informed, and I look forward to the day when more people realize how courageous these folks were being in trying to save this planet for all of us.
You know, it's really interesting, but one of the things that movement has empowered, you know, since we've lost journalism a long time ago, journalism became media, and much more obviously in the service of who's paying the bills. And so what the QAnon sparked has been citizen journalists, that individuals who've gone out and who've done research, who know more about certain things than perhaps the experts in that field, and who have this willingness to pursue these ideas that certainly are revealing in these apocalyptic times, lifting the veils on many things that are sacred cows. And so what's happening is that it's bringing up a tremendous amount of fear and resistance. And I'm seeing that fear and resistance on all sides. You know, you mentioned your epiphany of being the quiet at the center of all of these moving forces. And, you know, and there's a certain quality that I think we have to develop, is how do we be the observer at the center of the storm while everything swirls around? So how do we, actually precipitate more conversation, lower the fear barrier, and what are some of the things that you have found useful in that process?
Well, one suggestion I would make, and I promise that Steve didn't pay me for this, is subscribe to Wiki Politiki, because Steve has a broader spectrum of guests on than literally anyone that I know. And I think you embody keeping a sense of humor while taking this whole situation very seriously. And that's a key part of it right there. But for me, a lot of what keeps me going is I just, in all the people I've had the opportunity to meet all over the world, the vast majority of them, probably 97% of them, would give you the shirt off their back in a storm. They're really good people and really out to create wholesome communities and have human beings thrive. So we outnumber the psychopaths by a huge margin. And we've also, as I say in Thrive 2, we've got the life force, we've got truth, and we've got love on our side. And those are insurmountable. It could be ugly in the meantime while the forces of deception and coercion and repression are trying to do their thing, because they're so afraid of losing control, so afraid of being exposed for who they are. I have no doubt that the forces of light will win in the long run. But meanwhile, we're in an info war. That's why we do the media that we do. We're in an info war that I want to win so we don't have to fight the physical war. The other thing
go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I finished because I definitely want to hear you finish, and then I'll state my.
Well, the other thing that really tends to keep Kimberly and me going is just seeing the evidence. You know, in Thrive 2, the reason we made it is that the results that we were seeing were so encouraging with already existing solutions worldwide that we just couldn't keep it, you know, to ourselves. We were so optimistic when so many people were losing hope. And you'll see, for those of you, when you see Thrive 2, the whole thing starts with the unified field. We are actually the human beings who are alive at the time that the unified field is being revealed as an accurate theory. I've been working for 20 years with Nassim Haramein and Marshall Lefferts and Adam Apollo, and Nassim has really been doing the physics. A bunch of the rest of us have been doing the geometry and the music and then the applications. And so we got to reveal that in Thrive 2, and he's just about to come out with the paper that brings it all together. But the key thing is, another theory, that's great, but the key thing is that there are people who are in touch enough with the dynamics of the unified field that they are actually building multiple free energy devices. They are actually building devices which are healing people from incorrigible diseases at incredible rates. And it turns out the language that they speak about this field is identical to the shamans. They're talking about vibration, frequency, and resonance. They're talking about, whether you're an inventor or a meditator, finding the still point and then opening to what the inventors call the straw, opening the straw to tap the knowledge, the healing, the energy of the universe, and then ultimately to bring those same principles into human self-organizing. This is not a new idea for humanity, but it's a new idea for most people. I mean, Martin Luther King was aware of it in his nonviolence. Gandhi called it Hind Swaraj, but it's really this notion of the non-aggression principle and what Gandhi called self-governance. And because that's the application of being in harmony with frequency, vibration, and being in resonance with the unified field. And that's why we're spending so much time teaching about that, because frankly, I believe that this is the evolutionary imperative for humanity right now. If we can understand and harmonize with that, with the dynamics of the unified field, we will not only survive, we will thrive. And if we don't wake up to that fast enough, literally the technologies, the weaponry that we have now could set us back 60 million years.
Yep, definitely. And really what we're talking about is the difference between a narrative, as well-meaning as it may sound. I mean, I think a lot of the people who are involved in, you know, wanting to vaccinate everybody, you know, more the soldiers than the leaders, are going, wow, this is going to be a great thing. We're working for the betterment of all. But what they're not recognizing is that this is a top-down imposed narrative and system, as opposed to something that is much more resonant with our Declaration of Independence, which is we have these rights from the bottom up. We have these rights to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness simply by being alive. And the natural forms of collaboration and the natural forms of organization that don't require force are the ones that are going to prevail, because they're irresistible, right? I mean, when people get together... So
beautifully said. You know, what you just described there, Steve, to me, that's what my life is devoted to. That's the key to the whole thing for humanity in these supposedly troublesome and confusing times. And they are very challenging. But the way out is not easy, but it is simple. It's exactly what you described. But it's like in the times of slavery, people couldn't imagine how the economy could work without slavery. But we got rid of slavery because it was the right thing to do. And then guess what? You know, in comes the cotton gin and all these different ways of organizing and so forth. And now we look back and we shudder at the notion of slavery. But it's the same way. We're still caught in financial slavery. We're still caught in political slavery. And it's hard for us to imagine a world with rules, protective rules that are non-coercive in nature, but no rulers. And that's what we need to be able to more fully imagine. How would that civilization actually work? And I'm writing a major book on that right now. And then most challenging of all is, How do we move from here to there?
This is really excellent, because I think that that is quite specifically what this is all about. It's about this this sense of realization and collaboration that we don't need force. And, you know, again, as we look at our individual selves, force is a function of the ego that wants to control, when the bigger picture is there's something else in command. And when we begin to, as you say, resonate with this unified field, this is a great opportunity. We're coming close to the end of our conversation. On our website, we have a link to the Thrive movie. Why don't you tell people what the website is, where people can find out more about the movie and your community?
Yeah, come see us at thriveon.com. And there's a lot there. There's recommended top 10 actions. There's the solution hub. We're about to open a store of aligned products. There's all sorts of information about each of the main sectors. And I especially want you to check out the Freedom Portal. We've launched a communication portal with humanity right now where we really explore exactly the issues that Steve and I have been talking about for the last hour.
Thank you, Foster Gamble. Rules without rulers. I love rules without rulers. The golden rule as opposed to the rule of gold. It's a pleasure to have you. I look forward to having you again. This is Steve Behrman, WikiPolitiki, with our guest, Foster Gamble. See you next week.
Thank you, Steve.